I am going tap crazy. I love the zap of the tap. They call me the tapper. When I start tapping, something happens. I tip, 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 and then I tap, tap, tap. When I go tappy, I am happy. When I tapper, I am happier. I do a tap dance and a happy dance. I tap here, I tap there, I tap everywhere. Here I go, a-tappin' again. I tap for tea, I tap for time, I tap to pay my parking fine. I tap in the day, I tap at night, I tap by the bay, I tap for a bite. I tap in front, I tap in back, I tap for fries, and I tap for a Mac. I tap far and near, I tap for breakfast and for beer. I tap for whiskey and for rum, I tap for gum because I want some. I tap at Tim's, I tap at Tom's, I tap until my tap is gone. I tap at casinos, I tap at bars, someday I'll tap to go to the stars. My credit may be in the crapper, but I am still the tapper. With a tap, tap here and a tap, tap there, here a tap, there a tap, everywhere a tap, tap. Old Chris Wanamaker had a card. E-I-E-I-O. I tap it up, I tap it down. My money goes around the town. But too many taps on the till, I don't get a thrill. All I get is a big bill. And if all I can buy is groceries on the sly, will I starve and die? And if I lose my card, I'll be in a pickle, 'cause I don't have a nickel. And if someone else taps my card, I will be barred. As my debt goes up, I scream and shout. The collection man will find me out. When I go bankrupt, I will shout. I guess I need a paper route. So that's a poem. Maybe I should say it's a draft of a poem I wrote some time ago that describes my own experience with credit cards. Hi, I'm Chris Wanamaker, and this is Capitalism Today, the program that examines the advantages and disadvantages of capitalism, the economic system in which we live and work. It examines these advantages and disadvantages on the people of St. John. In 2014, a study based on statistics from Stats Canada showed the city of St. John, New Brunswick, has tied Toronto for the highest child poverty rates. And I'm told that since then, things haven't really changed too much. They still have the highest poverty rates in the country, these two cities, St. John, New Brunswick, and Toronto. So to get a perspective from Toronto on the problem, later in the program, I'll talk to somebody by the name of John Clark. He's a poverty activist in Toronto with the Ontario Coalition Against Poverty. But first, to get a local perspective on the problem, I've invited into our studio today a woman in St. John who has been living in poverty for many years. So Vicky, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much.
And you've been experiencing poverty for many years in St. John.
Yes.
Since the 1990s, actually. What's that experience been like for you?
Well, you feel very disheartened, unfortunate, and miserable.
Can you say that again?
You feel very disheartened, unfortunate, and very miserable.
Okay. What has been the biggest challenge for you?
Take care of bills, rent, heating, having enough food to make it through to the end of the month.
It sounds very challenging.
It can be, yes.
Yeah. So you really have to watch your money
very... You got to watch your pennies.
Very carefully, every cent.
Mm-hmm.
And that must be constantly on your mind then.
Well, every second, because you don't know when you're going to be able to pay for your next meal.
Yeah, I hear you. You don't know, like, if you're going to be able to afford your next meal sometimes. So do you ever go hungry?
You divide your meals.
Yeah.
A lot of the time to make sure you have enough for the next one.
Okay, so you're very careful about meal planning then.
Precision.
So precision, right, I get you. What has been the biggest challenge for you, would you say?
Mostly right now, it's food, taking care of the food.
Uh-huh. And food prices in the city are not easy.
Especially fruits and vegetables.
Yes. Where do you shop for food?
Oh, it could be whatever has the sales.
Okay.
It could be Superstore, it could be Sobeys, it could be whatever has the most sales on.
So you're very careful about the sales. I hear you.
Yes.
And so you get the flyers then? You look at the flyers?
Yes, I do. Yes.
Yeah.
Whatever
yeah.
they have on sale, sometimes they'll have certain produce on sale. And sometimes they'll have some higher than others, so you don't touch those. You make sure you get what you can afford and how much you can get.
Do you buy anything at the regular price?
No.
You never buy anything at the regular price?
Because you can't afford it. You got to pick it in bulk.
Okay.
Little bits in bulk.
Okay. So you would buy like a lot of what, for example? Like a lot of anything? Or a lot of...
Just little bits of each.
Little bits of each.
Yeah. And it only does you like maybe if you're lucky, the first
okay.
couple of weeks.
Okay.
After that.
Okay. How do you manage to eat nutritiously then? Or can you eat nutritiously?
Depending on your budget, most times you don't. You buy only what you can afford. Or you try to have enough to join a food purchasing club.
What is a food purchasing club?
That's the club that's next to St. Joe's. It is a place where you can go to purchase fruits and vegetables in bulk. And you can get either a single order for $10 or a $20 order for double order.
Okay, and what do you get for that?
Get quite a bit. You can get at least, for a single order, I think you get two or so bags. And then for a double order, you get that plus an extra.
And what's in the bags? Like
all kinds. Well, whatever's in season.
Okay.
Like turnips, carrots. So, broccoli, lettuce.
Okay, really. fresh vegetables.
Oh, yes.
Okay.
And fruit, lots of nice fruit.
Okay. Yeah. Do you ever go to the food banks at all?
No.
You don't?
No.
Okay. Do you ever go to the, like, the dinners? Sometimes you can get, like, a free lunch or a free dinner. At
No, I've
no,
never
you,
been
you
to
don't,
them.
You don't go to those? Okay.
No.
You prefer not to? Okay. What other kinds of challenges do you face?
The prospect of owning a home, some places are high rental fees, rental property. Transportation, you have to make sure you have enough for transportation. Medical care, depending on how much money you have, if it's privatized or it's paid by the government, and then their medications. Now, sometimes you have money through insurance to pay for it, and sometimes you don't. So if you have it paid for, you're lucky. But if you don't, then you
okay,
suffer.
Okay. So let's look at those things. Transportation, like what kind of transportation do you get?
Oh, if you travel by bus or
okay.
if you have a car, you have to have enough money to pay for both. If you pay for either one.
Right.
And if you don't have it, then you're going to be walking a lot of the way.
Yeah. Do you do a lot of walking?
Sometimes, yeah.
Yeah.
It saves.
Okay. So some do you stay in sometimes because you can't afford
transportation? If you don't have
transportation?
The money, you're pretty well housebound.
Right.
Yeah. Right now, I do have transportation taken care of.
Okay.
But sometimes when you want to go places, like if you want to, like say you want to go see a show or you want to say take in some kind of entertainment, you have to budget your money enough so that you can make sure that you have enough to do you the whole month.
Right.
Pay all your taken care of first, and then if you have enough for miscellaneous,
okay.
then you can.
Okay. So on any given day, are you looking at how much you're spending and how much you've got left then? And you have a budget for the month?
I have to have a budget, yes.
Okay. So you keep track of everything? You keep your receipts?
You have to keep receipts. You have to keep a track of how much you can spend on what and how much you can put away for yourself, which is not much because it usually gets... Every time you go somewhere, either to a mall, a grocery store, there's always something you need to buy. And then the money just... It's gone. So you never really have enough at the end of the month.
So there's always this sense of scarcity, like
yeah.
just not having enough, like
mm-hmm.
just kind of
there's
feeling...
There's never enough.
Feel like not enough money just to meet basic needs.
Mm.
Like what about medication? What if you can't take your medication?
Well, I'm lucky for that point right now. But if you need anything higher, sometimes they won't pay for it. So
okay.
and sometimes they, depending on the medication. So it's a touch and go kind of thing.
Okay. So... Health is an issue then.
Yeah, you got
yeah.
Taking care of your health when you're poor is very difficult.
Yeah, and plus the stress, right? You know, I can
stress.
Just imagine the stress.
Yes, it's very big.
Wow. So how do you deal with the stress then? How do you deal with the
wherever you can find supports, like friends, family, and anywhere you can find supports is the best way to cope with it.
Do they help you out financially, friends or family? Or
well, depends. It depends on the person.
Yeah.
And how much you need and what they can help
you with. I'm guessing you can only get so much, and yes. Then it's kind of like you hate to ask.
You do hate it.
Yeah. I hear you. So how do you know when it's kind of how much to ask for, how often to ask? Or
whatever you think their income is or whatever you think they can afford to spare.
Okay. Have you ever begged at all? Have you ever been on the street?
I haven't begged in years.
Okay, but you did one time? Okay. We see the same people on King Street or Main Street or wherever it might be, they day after day, sort of.
Yeah. And you notice on the street that there's more and more people looking for funds. Like their hand is out and they're asking you for funds and you don't have enough to take care of yourself. So it's very hard to...
So it's kind of like you'd really like to help somebody out because you can understand where they're coming from, yeah. But you just simply cannot.
You cannot.
And do they understand that? They probably don't understand
that. Just come
that.
Back and ask you again later.
Yeah. So, okay. So what do you see as the main causes of poverty then? Or any thoughts about that? Any thoughts about what causes different people to get into a situation where they're poor? Or maybe you can think about your own situation.
It depends. I guess it could be one day you could have a job, one day you don't.
Mm-hmm.
Trying to live in paycheck to paycheck, but you're having a hard struggle because your hours are cut back.
Mm-hmm.
So that it makes it even harder to take care of your needs.
Mm. Okay. So, and it's needs that
it's
you need
about,
to take care
well,
of.
Between needs and your wants.
So do you ever get to a want?
You never got. Most times you don't get to have the want. You have to take care of your needs mostly.
So what's it like to see all these ads on TV and... You know,
food
like,
at night, the commercials.
Yeah.
They always show food commercials at night.
Yes.
And they know people are hungry. And when you don't have the money to pay for this food at night, or whenever that those commercials decide to show up, it's very frustrating.
And what about other things like clothing? Where do you get your clothing, if you don't mind me asking?
Oh, you can get it at on sales, when they have sales at the malls.
Yeah.
Like just Walmarts have all kinds of good sales sometimes. Yeah. And you can always go to... the bigger mall, and sometimes they'll have sales on there depending on where you go. So
where do you have a preference then at all, or
wherever's the best?
Okay.
Whatever has 70% off.
So you must do a lot of different trips to different places then.
Yes, I do.
What do you who are the different groups do you think that are affected by poverty? Any thoughts about that?
Seniors.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Definitely seniors. It's a decision of either food or medication, heat or food, or vice versa. Children having enough food at breakfast, lunch, at school. Without a food program, they starve.
Mm-hmm.
Single parents, some have to do without in every aspect. Single individuals, some have access for resources for extra help, but most don't. You're on your own. Families comes down to basic necessity needs and a lot of foregoing what you want to get by.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Do you think you'll ever get out of poverty?
I hope to one day.
Yeah. Can I ask how you hope to do that, or?
Well, I'm working towards a goal, and I'm hoping that goal will be met.
Okay.
In the future.
Okay. Like a work goal then?
Writing.
Oh, writing?
Yes.
Oh, really?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So you see yourself as a writer?
Yeah, well, hopefully.
Hopefully, yes. Okay. Well, that's very intriguing. Okay. What do you make of the system in which we live, the economic system?
Well, the government needs to play a bigger role in the elimination of poverty. The gap between the haves and the poor is astonishingly wide.
Do you see it getting greater then?
Well, they suffer in every aspect, and empty underlined, and it's no more promises. It needs more action.
Okay. So what do you think needs to change then? You think government needs to do more?
They need to get more involved, very much involved, financial-wise, more conversations, more than just empty promises. They need to fill the room with plausible ideas, maybe some quicker action, because the finances of the poor are getting less and less. And food banks can only do so much. And nonprofits can only handle so much. And a lot of them are being tapped fairly empty too quickly.
Oh, wow. Okay. So the services aren't adequate?
No.
At the moment? Have they ever been adequate?
No.
Okay.
Not to my knowledge.
Okay. Well, thank you for joining us. I hate to kind of end on that somewhat pessimistic note, but
you're very welcome.
But I guess it's being realistic, right?
Yes.
So, okay. Well, thank you very much for joining us. I've been talking with Vicky, who has experienced poverty in St. John for many years, hopes to get out of it through writing. And I really appreciate your sharing your experiences. Thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
You're listening to 107.3 Local FM. I'm Chris Wanamaker. You're listening to Capitalism Today. And in 2014, there was a study that I referred to earlier in the program based on statistics from Stats Canada that showed that the city of St. John has tied Toronto for having the highest child poverty rates. And apparently those rates have not changed from what I understand since that study was done. And so I think it's good to get an outside perspective from somebody who is in Toronto, who is with the Ontario Coalition Against Poverty, an Ontario, it's an anti-poverty group. His name is John Clark. John, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much, Chris.
And the OCAP group, Ontario Coalition Against Poverty, is a group in Ontario that promote the interests of the poor and the homeless. And the group, according to Wikipedia at least, enjoys a particular notoriety, especially in Toronto, due to its publicity-generating techniques such as direct action, including demonstrations that are sometimes confrontational. Do you agree with that description of the group, John, from Wikipedia?
Well, I mean, I don't think publicity as such is our focus. It's more of a means to an end. But I certainly accept that that the poor can suffer all they want if they suffer in silence. The issue is to mobilize a movement that can actually confront poverty and those responsible, and we do that, and we do that with great enthusiasm, and we do it with, in our view, complete justification.
So that enthusiasm, that positive attitude really makes a difference, I can imagine. Here in St. John, we interviewed an activist by the name of Sharon Thompson, who said that people here in this city are afraid of speaking out too much about their poverty and their situation, for fear perhaps that they might get cut off from their benefits. Have you encountered that kind of thing in Toronto as well, or maybe not?
Oh, yeah, most certainly. I mean, those fears are there. You would also add to that the fact that people who experience poverty, particularly if they experience it in the form of having to turn to social assistance, are really under incredible pressure to feel that they're unworthy, to feel that they're not the deserving poor or what have you. And those things are very real. They exert great pressure on people, and they prevent people from acting collectively. But I think the main reason why people don't get involved in a social movement against poverty is because there's nothing in their experience that really would lead them to conclude that collective action can make a difference. And that's the real task of a movement, is to create the kind of a critical mass of social resistance that is able to convince people and is actually able to transform into a kind of a mass movement. And we haven't achieved that yet, but that's exactly the challenge that I think we face as not just in Toronto or St. John, but internationally, as austerity deepens and the war on the poor intensifies.
Okay, you talk about a war on the poor, you talk about austerity. Governments seem to be very concerned sometimes about deficits and debts and what they say is the need to cut back on social programs so that we're all, in a sense, paying the price of these economic issues that governments say they face. What do you have to say about that?
Well, I mean, in truth, we don't particularly care. I mean, it's standard fare that that when they want to bail out banks or drop bombs on people, then there's always plenty of resources and plenty of money. But when people want housing and people want decent income and when people want health care and other basic things like that, then all of a sudden the deficit is this impossible barrier that we don't care about their deficit. We care about the survival of people, and we care about the rights of people to have decent and adequate income and decent lives, and we're prepared to fight for that.
Okay, well, it sounds like there is a tremendous initiative on your part, at least, and on the part of your group. Can you tell us about your group and how it came about and what it has accomplished so far?
Yeah, OCAP has existed now for some 27 years. And we come out of a big march that was organized in 1990 that demanded increases in social assistance. And at that time, the government announced increases of about 8% in social assistance rates. And over the years, we've taken up many struggles. Some of them have been over the rights and entitlements of individual people, denied income, facing eviction, facing deportation, and what have you. And we've also taken up bigger campaigns against social cutbacks, actions to win an open housing for people. And we've challenged the whole agenda that's being thrown against the poor, and that has spilled over into a particular struggle around the situation facing homeless people. And we've contributed to opening space, opening shelter. So we've really tried to, as we like to say, fight to win. We've really tried to focus on winning victories. While the overall agenda of poverty and austerity has intensified unquestionably, we feel we have made an actual difference in people's lives. We've actually won victories, and we've created a model of how it's possible to mobilize in communities under attack to resist.
Okay, the face of poverty, the way it looks like in Toronto, is it the same everywhere? St. John and Toronto seem to be very similar in terms of the rates of poverty that are experienced in both cities.
Yeah.
If I went to Toronto, would I see the same kind of poverty that I see in St. John? Homelessness, people on the streets, people not being able to get adequate housing, that kind of thing?
You certainly would. Toronto is, of course, the largest city in the country, so the levels of homelessness, the scale of the problem is immense. The scale of people turning to food banks and being unable to pay their rent and everything is massive. In this city, which is reckoned to be one of the most multicultural cities on earth, the racialization of poverty is absolutely intense. And on the streets amongst the homeless population, the disproportionate degree to which Indigenous people face homelessness and destitution is also absolutely outrageous and scandalous in this city.
So that could compare with Aboriginal people in St. John or in New Brunswick, who would also be experiencing high levels of poverty, according to the statistics. But you say racialized. There are other ethnic groups in Toronto. There are lots more ethnic groups in Toronto, or larger amounts of people in those ethnic groups than in St. John. What are the other ethnic groups that experience poverty in Toronto?
Well, I think generally there are many people who experience poverty, but racism intersects with poverty, so that you can actually there's actually studies done that show that there is a when it comes to the experience of poverty, there's a racial hierarchy, with black and indigenous people being experiencing the most egregious and outrageous levels of poverty.
Okay, and so you see a connection between poverty and race. Do you see a connection between poverty and other social problems then as well?
Well, yes. I mean, there is. We live in a society in which there are various forms of oppression. So it's a given that the experience of poverty intersects with those different forms of oppression. So that there's higher rates of poverty amongst women. Young people and older people are more likely to experience poverty, and of course, disabled people face poverty at levels that is just absolutely mind-boggling.
What you say about people with disabilities actually corresponds with a recent report that was released by the Common Ground for Social Justice group here in New Brunswick. They released a report here called Disability and Deep Poverty in New Brunswick, and that report showed that that connection between people who have severe disabilities and their inability sometimes to be adequately housed or adequately cared for in other ways, being able to find food, nutritious food, for example.
Yes.
Find health care, that kind of thing.
Yeah. I mean, something very, very significant is happening with regards to disabled people. In Ontario, the most extreme manifestation of this is the incredible abandonment of injured workers on what is called the Workers' Safety and Insurance Board. But disabled people on Ontario Disability Support Program are facing as well a much more restrictive and difficult system. And what is happening in terms of the international austerity agenda, and in the UK, this has emerged perhaps more sharply than anywhere with the work capability assessment that's been imposed on people. But what is actually happening is that the sort of the traditional Victorian and even Elizabethan concept of a deserving and undeserving poor has broken down. And there's every effort being made to abandon disabled people and force disabled people to participate in the scramble for the lowest paying jobs on offer. So this reaches the sort of the level where former Department for Work and Pensions secretary in Britain makes a statement that there is. That no one is really unable to work, that everybody must be assessed according to their employability. And that's something that's being imposed on disabled people without any real supports being provided. And it's a particularly brutal and outrageous element of the austerity agenda.
So when you talk about the austerity agenda, I'm hearing a kind of intentionality there. In other words, it isn't just that poverty has kind of happened without anybody kind of behind the scenes manipulating economic conditions. It sounds like you think that this agenda is I take it a government agenda then?
Well, a government and a corporate agenda, and it has its experts and proponents within the academic world as well, of course. When it comes to the development of the neoliberal austerity agenda, an absolutely exceptional role was played by the people in the University of Chicago, the School of Economics there, with Milton Friedman, played an absolutely astounding role in terms of developing consciously that particular agenda. And one of the elements of that has been a deliberate attempt to degrade and weaken systems of income support so as to force people to compete for the lowest paying jobs on offer. And the results of that have been absolutely breathtaking. In Ontario, as recently as 1997, one worker in 40 was working for the minimum wage. By 2015, that had gone to one worker in eight. And the fact that social assistance payments have been so brutally reduced has been absolutely decisive in creating that abundant supply of low-wage workers.
Can I ask if you know, I don't know if you have the figure offhand, what the social assistance rate would be in Toronto for, say, a single person with or without a disability?
A single person on what is called Ontario Works is just slightly in excess of $700 a month.
And this is in Toronto, where prices are sometimes double what they are in St. John.
Yeah, I mean, the complete inability of people to obtain and retain housing on those kinds of income levels is clearly established.
And then the escalation of housing prices in Toronto and Vancouver has been absolutely astronomical. A lot of people can't afford to own a house. And what are rents like in Toronto these days?
Well, rents have indeed skyrocketed. Someone on social assistance isn't even close to being able to. The income that people receive on Ontario social assistance is supposed to be divided into a payment for basic needs and a rental payment, but you put those two together and they don't match rental costs.
What would be the rental cost of a downtown one-bedroom apartment in Toronto right now?
I'm afraid I don't have that figure right.
What would be your best guess on that?
I'm not entirely sure. So
okay. But it would be fairly high, I would imagine.
Oh, it'd be very high. It'd be outlandishly high.
Yes, I can imagine. What would be the minimum wage then in Toronto right now? Do you know?
Just over... what's the minimum wage? Do you know what the minimum wage is? I think it's $11.75.
So it sounds like your group has been fighting for an increase in minimum wage, an increase in the social assistance rates, to make those incomes livable. How have you achieved success in that fight at all?
In truth, we've been, in terms of the payments that people receive on social assistance, they become less and less inadequate. They become less and less adequate progressively, and people have been forced back. And in the years that OCAP has been operating, certainly we haven't been able to turn that back. Certainly people are poorer than they were. There was a whole period when the Conservative government of Mike Harris was in power. But since 2003, there's been a Liberal government in Ontario, and people are now poorer than when the Liberals Liberals took over. Where we have scored some successes is in preventing outright cuts to some of the supplementary and additional benefits people get, like the special diet and money that's available for people if they want to obtain or retain housing. Some of the cuts in those areas we've been able to challenge and partly prevent. But there's no question that the austerity agenda in Ontario has been bigger than we are.
Wow. How do you challenge these policies? How do you go about that? Do you organize? How do you get people together to become activists in this way?
We've organized on the basis of campaigns. We've organized on the basis of marches, of demonstrations, of protests, of direct actions. And those are the things that have been able to make a difference to the extent that we've been able to actually challenge an agenda that, as I just said, is at this point bigger than we are.
And what would be your current efforts? How would you describe your current efforts along these lines?
Well, we're part of a common front organisation, if you will, called Raise the Rates Coalition, and we've been campaigning with people in other cities and with trade unions, particularly QP Ontario, around social assistance rates. And the Raise the Rates Coalition has been the mechanism by which we've been able to prevent some of the secondary cuts from taking place, or to reduce the severity of the cuts. And the other major area that OCAP is incredibly focused on at the moment is the unbelievable crisis that exists within the homeless shelters. They're absolutely overwhelmed, And in addition to the official shelter system, which is putting up over 5,000 people every night, there's a backup system of of substandard shelters in the form of warming centres and drop-ins and church run out of the colds that has itself become completely overwhelmed. So we're in the process now, and there was just a big meeting at City Council in which they dug their heels in and made a decision to not open additional space but to try to cram people into the existing shelter facilities. So we're in the middle of a really sharp battle as winter sets in to try to ensure that that new space is opened up urgently as a life-saving measure.
So are most of your conversations say about the shelter situation or about in minimum wage rates or social assistance rates, are those conversations with the municipal governments? Are they with the provincial governments, maybe even the federal government? How does that occur?
Well, when it comes to, I mean, at one level or another, we're involved in challenging each of the levels of government. We just participated with allies in different parts of the country in a national day of action around the Liberal government, the Trudeau government's housing strategy. Provincially, the question of social assistance rates is a provincial matter, and that's where we've been up against the Ontario Liberals. And when it comes to shelter provision, while the crisis on the streets is caused by all the levels of government, the delivery of support and shelter for homeless people is in the hands of the municipal government. So we're challenging the Toronto City Council on that one.
Okay. When you talk about a national day of action around housing, I believe the federal government released a national housing strategy, which seems to be a step in the right direction. Is that your view of it?
Or no, I mean, I think that the Trudeau government very much represents the repackaging of the neoliberal agenda under a progressive guise, and the housing strategy that they put forward, I think very much conforms to that. That it's been described by allies in BC as a national gentrification strategy, and so it very much focuses on the idea of a model of redevelopment where money is given to developers and they are supposed to provide token amounts of affordable housing that isn't really affordable as part of their plan. It's very striking that in both the representatives of the Liberal government announced the housing strategy in Toronto and Vancouver both used locations as the backdrop that were connected with the creation of so-called mixed neighborhoods where upscale housing is going to be created with a dubious affordable component that will disappear over time. So no, I don't believe that the Liberal government of Justin Trudeau is moving in a progressive direction at all. I think they're just simply covering up the fact that their whole agenda is one that is about upscale redevelopment.
So it sounds like kind of a smoke and mirrors strategy, the way you see it. They're packaging something that isn't actually going to be much of a reality. What kind of suggestions would you have for them in terms of housing, like a public housing strategy? That would be separate from a mixed development kind of approach, or
yeah, absolutely. The creation of social housing is the only possible way to deal with the crisis that exists. The private market is not going to create truly affordable housing. Only by actually ensuring that social housing is built, that's the only possible solution.
So you would not be in favor of public-private partnerships, for example. That wouldn't.
No, I mean that's the whole focus, and not just in housing. That's the whole focus of the Trudeau government. And no, absolutely, we completely reject that approach. And what we demanded with the National Housing Day of Action was that some $11 billion that they talked about spending over a period of years be actually allocated to the creation of social housing during the present mandate of this government.
Okay. Wow. Okay. So a lot of the problem, the way you see it, is that is a systemic kind of issue, right? Like you see this problem as systemic in nature. It has to do with the economic system in which we live, the system of capitalism, the system of, you know, private property, private development, profit-oriented corporations. Would that be a fair way to characterize the way that you see the issue?
Yes, I mean, OCAP is because we're an anti-poverty organization, we think it's indispensable to, at the same time, be an anti-capitalist organization. Poverty is something that has poverty and unemployment and homelessness are not just regrettable side effects of a capitalist system, but inevitable and necessary products. And so, yes, challenging the social and economic system that leads to poverty and creates poverty is absolutely an indispensable element of anti-poverty organizing.
So it sounds like that challenge is ongoing. And it's not going to end in the foreseeable future. But if there was a time when you didn't have to challenge as much and you could actually help construct a different kind of economic system, what kind of economic system would that be? It sounds like it would be a system where there would be more equality, more fairness, more justice for people. People would have their basic needs met in some ways. They wouldn't be worried about, you know, surviving from paycheck to paycheck or from one day to another. But can you say more about what that would look like?
Well, I mean, while OCAP is not a political party and we're not looking to put forward a detailed manifesto, if we say we're an anti-capitalist organization, then that must by of necessity mean that you need to replace a system in which handfuls of families own and control the means of wealth and distribution of wealth, and replace that with a society in which there is a collective ownership and a rational and just and democratically controlled plan of how to operate society is put into effect.
So would the word socialism describe the kind of economic system that you're describing?
Yes, I mean, certainly within OCAP you will find people who are socialists, you'll find people who are anarchists, and you'll find people who are poor and very angry about being poor. But obviously a society in which there is private ownership of the means of production is replaced by a collective and democratic one.
Okay. You use terms like neoliberal, for example. You used that term earlier. You've used terms like austerity. What do you mean by neoliberal? Can you say more about that?
Well, I think the neoliberal agenda is one that emerged at the end of the post-war boom. There was a period after the Second World War that lasted perhaps 25 years, where social programs were strengthened, where concessions were made to trade unions, where working class living standards improved, and by the late 60s and certainly the early 70s, the boom had come to an end. Rates of profits had fallen precisely because of the concessions that had been made, and a decision was made to reverse that and to introduce a series of measures that would restore the rate of profit and intensify the rate of exploitation. And that included an attack on trade unions. It included moving production to countries that paid lower wages, and it involved an attack on social programs, particularly income support systems.
Mm-hmm. So would the solution then in any kind of new economic system that would develop eventually as a result of the challenges that you and other groups are making to it, would that system then be kind of a basic income kind of system that, basic income would be the solution to housing problems, homelessness, poverty?
No, I mean, we'd like to see housing built. We'd like to see, accessible, fully accessible, free healthcare. We'd like to see We'd like to see public transport a free and available service. We're not supporters of the notion of providing a basic income cash payment. And what's emerging, and Ontario is one of the pilot sites for testing basic income, what's emerging is despite progressive hopes that it would be redistributive and transformative, what's actually being created with these pilots is a model that's entirely in line with the notion of advancing the neoliberal agenda. So you've got in Ontario a pilot that is means tested, that provides income that is still well below the poverty line, and that is primarily devoted to providing a wage top up to low paid workers, which is to say, a subsidy to low-paying employers, and people on social assistance who go on the Ontario program lose additional benefits and supports that they were previously receiving. Disabled people lose supports for mobility devices. There's no longer support for medical transportation, etc. So it points to the kind of model that right-wing proponents of basic income like Charles Murray in the United States have put forward, of ensuring that basic income replaces rather than augments other systems of social provision. And we're convinced that that's what is being developed with pilots like the one in Ontario or the one in Finland. So we don't see, despite progressive hopes, we don't see basic income as something that's going to do anything other than advance the agenda of neoliberalism.
So again, it sounds like smoke and mirrors. It sounds like appearance versus reality. It sounds like you've become very used to seeing through government initiatives that seem to be good on the surface, but in fact don't really address the underlying issues.
Yeah, and I think there's a particular interest at the moment in precisely those kinds of smoke and mirrors, of trying to, you know, the World Bank and the International Monetary Fund have been wringing their hands about the mood of anger that's out there because of rampant inequality. And so they're not really going to address that inequality, but they're looking for ways to camouflage and put a progressive veneer over things. And in Canada at the moment, we're blessed with a federal government that is highly skilled in just that kind of maneuvering.
So a lot of it sounds like a public relations kind of ploy on the part of political parties or on the part of governments to kind of reassure the population that these kinds of issues are being addressed. But it doesn't sound like they really are. I've just been thinking, as you've been describing Toronto, John, that one of the differences between Toronto and St. John is that Toronto sounds to me like it's more activist, or maybe it's just because you're front and center of that activist activity. I'm not sure, but St. John sounds to me to be relatively complacent. People seem to be accepting their situation more here, perhaps, than they do in Toronto. You know, it's kind of hard to make a direct comparison because Toronto obviously is much larger than St. John, but I don't know. I have the impression, and having visited Toronto lately, having talked to activists in Toronto, there seems to be much more of a sense that, you know, something can be done than here in St. John. But maybe that's just a perception on my part. Maybe it's not. I know you really can't speak to that yourself because you live in Toronto, just as I have difficulty comparing because I live in St. John. But it sounds like an activist climate that you're right in the center of. Would you describe it that way?
Well, I mean, yes. I mean, this is a big city, and you know, understandably, there's a definite grouping of people who are involved in that kind of that particular form of social movement, political activity. But I think we've, to say the least, there's not much room to be complacent. You know, the great majority of people are not awakened to political life, are not involved in challenging this agenda in the way they need to be. So yeah, there's a huge room for improvement in terms of the level of resistance and fight back.
Mm-hmm. So it sounds like a great motivation is needed sometimes to kind of raise people's, well, and people's awareness or people's consciousness needs to be raised. So it's a huge challenge in one way, and yet there are people who, in my experience at least in Toronto, seem to be very committed to these different causes. Where does that motivation, that commitment, that resilience come from with people? I'm guessing it has to do with the situations that they themselves have experienced.
Well, yeah, there are certainly people who, based on their own experiences of poverty and everything, have become active in challenging it. But again, I mean, I think that we need to recognize that grouping of people is very important and is an investment for the future. But the big mass struggles to really challenge seriously this agenda of austerity and actually pose the question of organizing society on a different basis, those struggles are still ahead of us.
Mm-hmm. I remember the Occupy movement in Toronto years ago. Were you in Toronto at that time movement at St. James Park? And I just happened to be on holiday. I had no idea that people were camping out there. I just happened to be strolling around that area. And lo and behold, there were tents, there were speeches, there was music, there was a tremendous kind of upbeat atmosphere. One of the most interesting things that I've ever seen in Toronto, a complete contrast to walking down Bloor Street or walking down Yonge Street, with all of the commercialization on those streets. There was a whole group of people that suddenly came together. So what was your, do you remember that time at all? Does that stir up any memories? Were you part of that movement as well?
I wasn't myself heavily involved in the in Occupy Toronto, although I was certainly there and participated. It was an important movement, very very contradictory, with lots of different currents within it, and took some criticisms for not being as having the clearest of plans and the clearest of sets of demands and all the rest of it, but it was a manifestation of something that were of an anger and a sense of frustration and grievance that surfaced at that particular time in that particular way, and as such, it was quite important and quite precious, and points to the bigger things that lie ahead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it certainly does. You've really given us a kind of a picture of what's happening with your organization, with what's happening in Toronto, and we can see the similarities between Toronto and St. John. Appreciate your perspective very much, John. Anything more that you would like to add?
Was pretty wide-ranging.
Pretty wide-ranging. I appreciate that. It was, actually. So thank you for joining us. Really appreciate your insights, and it's really interesting to compare a perspective from Toronto with our own perspectives here in St. John, New Brunswick. So thank you very much. Appreciate your participation, John, tremendously. Thank you.
Thanks a lot. Thanks very much.
Today, everybody scatters, and the hopes it goes away. How many kids they've murdered, only God can say. Don't believe in guarded borders. believe in generals, or they're sticking torture states. And when I talk with the survivors of things too sickening to relate, if I had a rocket launcher, if I had a rocket launcher, if I had a rocket launcher, I would retaliate.
Some son of a bitch would die.